Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 29, Explanation of Devotional Service, Text Number 3. Let's repeat. Virago
yena
purusha Bhagavan savato bhavet Achakshva Jivalokasya Vivida Mama Samsriti Virago Yena Purusho
Virago Yena Purusho
Bhagavan Savato Bhavet Bhagavan Savato Bhavet Achakshva Jivalokasya Achakshva Jivalokasya Vivida Mama Samsriti Vivida Mama Samsriti Virago yena purusho Bhagavan savato bhavet Achakshva jivalokasya Vivida mama samsriti Virago detached Yena, by which, Purusa, a person, Bhagavan, my dear Lord, Savata, completely, Bhavet, may become, Achakshva, please describe, Jivalokasya, for the people in general, Vivida, manifold, Mama, for myself, Samsriti, repetition of birth and death. Translation, Devahuti continued, my dear Lord, please also describe in detail, both for me and for people in general, the continual process of birth and death. For by hearing of such calamities, we may become detached from the activities of this material world. In this verse, the word Samsriti is very important. Shreya Sriti means the prosperous path of advancement towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Samsriti means the continued journey on the path of birth and death towards the darkest region of material existence. People who have no knowledge of this material world, God, and their actual intimate relationship with Him are actually going to the darkest region of material existence in the name of progress in the material advancement of civilization. To enter the darkest region of material existence means to enter into a species of life other than the human species. Ignorant men do not know that after this life, they are completely under the grip of material nature and will be offered a life which may not be very congenial. How a living entity gets different kinds of bodies will be explained in the next chapter. This continual change of bodies in birth and death is called samsara. Devotee requests her glorious son, Kapila Muni, to explain about this continued journey to impress upon the conditioned souls that they are undergoing a path of degradation by not understanding the path of bhakti yoga, devotional service. Virago yena purusho, Bhagavan savato bhavet, achakshva jivalokasya vivida mama samsriti. Translation again. Devahuti continued, my dear Lord, Please also describe in detail, both for me and for people in general, the continual process of birth and death. For by hearing of such calamities, we may become detached from the activities of this material world. Om Agyana Timrandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Shakshumilitam Yanatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pasapdale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamne Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pucharine Nivisesa Sunyavadi Pasachade Shatarine. One thing, I don't know if you notice, when you read from a scripture like Bhagavatam, you can hear the language that people use and how they address one another. It is said that by one speech, one can determine whether that person is cultured or uncultured, learned or unlearned. By the way a person used languages. And you can see in the Vedic time, people are so cultured when they address one another, whether it's a Supreme Lord or another person, they always use very endearing words. My dear Lord, my dear Queen, my dear King. How do people in Australia address one another? Hey mate.
Very personal.
Huh?
Very personal.
Personal. Hey mate. Very informal. Yeah. Right? But so even nowadays, sometimes you meet people who are more cultured. When they talk to you, they're very gentle, very polite, very courteous. And immediately you feel very impressed by that person, that this is a very cultured person. This is a person you want to show respect to. You know? Not just another buddy, you know? A drinking partner. And Prabhupada carries that. Prabhupada also, when people come across Prabhupada, he comes across as a very cultured, very aristocratic person. He has the charisma about him. Very, very aristocratic. His gesture, the way he speaks, his gesture, very, very classy, very high class. And immediately you're drawn to that person. Immediately you show, okay, don't muck around. I should show respect. So Prabhupada often said that devotees, we are ladies and gentlemen. The behavior of devotees, they are like gentlemen, they're ladies. So it's also important that as we are cultivating our Krishna consciousness, we should also be conscious and aware of our behavior, our habits, how we conduct ourselves. It's not just philosophy coming out of our mouth, but also how we conduct ourselves that people see, especially towards children. There's a saying, don't worry that your children are not listening to you, but be worried they're watching you. They may not listen to you, they may argue with you, they may protest and so on and so forth, but they're watching. They're watching what you're doing and they're observing. And that is what it will be impressing them. That will be the impression that they get by the way we conduct ourselves. So that I remember back in mid-1980s when I went to Russia, that was just before the opening up of the Eastern Bloc. So it was still undercover. So I went there on behalf of the BBT to act as a liaison for the devotees who are secretly translating Prabhupada's books there and publishing that. Right? If you get caught, you'll be sent to the gulag, labor camp or psychiatric hospital. And so We were going to different so-called safe house. Every day a different one. Empty apartment. And I remember there was this one of the devotees, either he's an editor or translator. And he asked me a question. He said, you know, when you try to translate it from Bhagavati, my dear king, it sounds very strange in Russian. I say it also sounds strange in English. In the present time anyway. Because who uses language like that? Who speak to one another like that? Do you speak to your wife like that? My dear wife. My dear Devi. My dear husband. No. Haribo. Can I have my dinner tonight? Can I have my dinner now? Right? So I said, in our present uncultured society, it sounds very strange. But that's why we're trying to educate the world. It may not sound okay because of our present status, but it just goes to show how elevated society were in the past, just by the language they use in addressing one another. And the other thing that Devahuti pointed out here, the continual process of birth and death. There are quite a few parts here in just this verse and the purport that Prabhupada pointed out. Devotee called birth and death, that is very important for people to hear of such calamities. He called birth and death as calamities. Now how many people actually consider that, okay, the death is like a calamity, that people cry. But birth is supposed to bring a lot of joy. Wow, here's another baby born. Oh, so cute, so sweet. There's a bundle of joy. And everyone's rejoicing. They have a different... then people get present, congratulations, and so on and so forth. But these are some of the miseries of the material world. Heat and cold. Birth and death. Hunger and thirst. The six pangs of material existence. What is there to rejoice? Birth and death. This birth is this poor person's soul has been stuffed up in the womb of the mother for 9 months. And it came to consciousness what? At the second, third month? Came to consciousness and then find himself in this confined position, squeezed up in the so-called what, yoga position. I know we do yoga, some do yoga.
Head down.
Yeah, with the head down, upside down. Not immediately, but gradually upside down. What do you call that asan, standing upside down? But that is more stretched out. But this is all bundled up like that, head down. We can barely do it for 1 minute or 2 minutes, and it's stuck there for a few months. Screaming for release, but there's no release. And finally squeeze out of a hole too small for the head. No wonder the baby is crying. Right? It's pain. Painful. Birth is painful. Every mother will tell you that. But it's glorified. Of course, everything has to be seen in the proper perspective, birth and death. Right? From a material sense, it's a calamity. Birth, another, the soul is taking birth again, has to go through all the karma of his past life, all the ups and downs of life, happiness, distress, and death is like the end of everything. But on the other hand, when we hear about glories of the Supreme Personality of God, hear about devotional service, then birth is glorious. Here's another soul taking birth to continue his journey in Krishna consciousness, not getting deeper into material existence. He's given another chance in the human form to perfect his life. So from that point of view, it's glorious. Right? Sometimes we get very impatient. People get impatient, they have to, I have to spend so many years. How many years I have to practice Krishna consciousness before I become perfect? Whole life. Hey, we've been going up and down in this material world in different, from what you call the Brahma to Gopa Indra, in everything in between. For how many lifetimes? Thousands, millions of lifetimes. So what is one birth? One birth, just give it to Krishna. And we go back and back to Godhead. No more, no more. Yesterday, last night, we had a wedding reception at Shams Prabhu's place. So two devotees, we were talking about different things. We were talking about a bit about society, about one of the most popular topic nowadays, especially on social media, is President Trump. Such a controversial figure, pro and con. But anyway, and then about local politicians, Victoria, and how they corrupted and this and that. And it was just, when you hear all these things, you just think I think everything is so bad. And I expressed myself, I said, actually, sometimes I feel very glad that I'm getting older and getting closer and closer to the end of my life and get away with from all this mess. And then Bhakta said, yeah, let's make sure you don't, if you don't come back again. I said, that's an impetus not to come back again, because by the time you come back, it's going to be even worse. It's not going to get better. So, and we've seen, those of us who have lived some years, we've seen how things just deteriorate. Things are just getting worse and worse. And it's like a polarizing of society. On one hand, spiritual awareness is increasing. On the other hand, material society is becoming more degraded. What used to be considered abnormal is now normal. And what is normal become abnormal. Everything is just topsy-turvy. Sometimes devotees also get confused by all this and start promoting all these abnormal activities to be normal just because it's prevalent in society. And therefore, again, they want to say, so important. Please describe to me in detail. Not on? That tree is dead. So there's no recording right now. No? You still pick up?
Yes, it's the same, but I guess it's different.
Right, oh, it's a completely different. Yeah. Alright. So, what was I saying? And that's why devotee is saying that, yes, you have described about the Sankhya philosophy, the nature of this material world, and so on. But now please describe in detail, not just for me, but also for people in general, all these continual process of birth and death, and how we can, and by hearing the calamities, that is not so beautiful and glamorous as it is, we become detached from the activities of that material world. And that's why it's important to be regular, because every day we have been bombarded. How glamorous material society is. All the billboards, you have some beautiful person advertising some product. On TV, on movies, everything is all glamorous, beautiful. Everything is beautiful. And everything that's not so beautiful, they hide it away. In some hospital somewhere, some hospice, old people put it in the aged care, a residential home, secluded, and make it look very nice, like a resort. And death quickly bundle them up, put them in a coffin, bury them or burn them up. Not like in India, everything is open. You can see, like third world country, in some third world country, you can still see. And it's like a reminder how life can be really tough. But in a Western society, all these not so nice things are hidden away. And we get to see only the so-called very nice, everything is glamorous. And people get enamored by it, and we forget. that there's so much pain, so much suffering in this material world. I remember back in the late 70s, there was this song by this devotee, Mangalacharan. His name is Michael Cassidy. When at that time, there was another bank, David Cassidy. David Cassidy and the Partridge Family. A very famous band. And so when we distributing this record, this LPs, with this song, we say, oh, it's Michael Cassidy. You know David Cassidy, right? This Michael Cassidy. As if insinuating there's some connection. And there'll be a producer, all the famous name, Carlos Santana, George Harrison, all this. But anyway, one of the songs was Stop and Think. You're just running around, but people don't stop and think. So the devotee said, it's so important for people to hear this. And there's another thing, sometimes people ask, what is a good question? What is a good question? Right? What is a good question to ask?
Which helps everyone.
Pardon?
That helps everyone.
Yes. So, Maharishi Parikshit actually asked those questions. When he found out that he was about to die, he only asked a few essential questions. So what is the duty of a person who is about to die? What should he hear? What should he chant? What should he remember? This was his main question. And Shukadev Goswami, none of the sages felt qualified to answer his question until Shukadev Goswami came along. And he said, Varyanyashate prasna krita loka hitam nipa atmavisamata pumsam srotavya disuya para. He said, your question is very glorious because the answer to this question is not only beneficial for yourself, but it's also beneficial for everyone. So that's the criteria of a good question that Shukadeva Goswami set up. So next time when we ask a question, we ask ourselves, is the answer to my question beneficial to my spiritual life? And also, that's a good question. And is it beneficial to everyone who hears it? If it is, then it's a very good question. So we can subject ourselves to that criteria and ask questions. And Shukadeva Goswami went on to say, he said, why he said this, your question is glorious? Because generally people are not interested. Right? There are thousands and thousands of topics to discuss, but nothing about how to break free from the entanglement of material existence. I remember when I was much younger, I'm still young. when I was working, and every weekend I'll come back to my hometown because it's not far away to meet up with my friends, and we stay out all night, right? And we'll go to bed when people go for Mangarati. That's the time we go to sleep. And what we talk about, when I think back, same old stuff. Every weekend we talk about the same old stuff, repeating the same old stuff. Chewing it over and over again. Spit it out, pick it up, chew, spit it out, pick it up, chew. Same stories, same leelas. And it's all about someone suffering. I remember this one, that time we had this, we were drinking and you got drunk and you were vomiting. Ah, ha, ha. And that was a good laugh. And these stories repeat itself over and over again. And you stay up all night talking about this thing. So much bliss and so much nectar there. Incredible. And I think about it, I just shake my head and say, how did I manage to do all that, waste all my time talking about useless things and staying up all night just to do that? And that's what people do. Doesn't matter, human beings, animals, birds, they all do the same thing. And where I grew up, it's a two-story house in the town. It's a small town. And we have all these electrical wire, telephone wires in the front. In India, you still see a lot of that. You have poles, and then you have all these wires, right? And those wires are just on the, practically the same level as our second floor windows. And all night, by evening time, you fill with birds. Fill up. Right? You've seen that in India also. Fill up. And all night, they're chipping, talking non-stop. And what do they talk about? You know, I found some really big fat worm today, somewhere. You know? And it's all about eating, sleeping, mating, defending. All they're talking about, what, you think they're talking about devotional service or pastimes, like Krishna Leela and all that? No! They're just talking about their existence, their eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And that's what people spend their whole life talking about. And then Sukadeva Goswami went on, how does people spend their time? He said, daytime, they work hard to maintain the family. Nighttime, they sleep or engage in sexual activities. And that's how people spend their time. And this life goes on. One day after another, one day passed. And time flies. I mean, look at us. We're already beginning of March 2017. And next thing we know, boom, it's already March 2018. It just goes like that. One day, it goes like that. Yeah. So there's urgency then, and that's why Prahlad Maharaj said, don't wait. You from young, as soon as you have the opportunity, we should engage ourselves in devotional service, and don't wait because you don't know. Maharaj Parikshit, in one sense, he was fortunate. He was given 7 days' notice. But Devahuti is showing his example. He's not waiting, it's not that she was about to die. Although we are all about to die, we don't know when. You know, we never know. One day we wake up, next day we go to sleep, next day we don't wake up. It happens all the time, everywhere. So Devahuti is already asking this question. He didn't get a warning, but she knows from the instructions of Kapila Dev, she knows. Better, it's important to ask this question now, which are very, very beneficial question, important question. Answers are very, very beneficial to understand that material life is not as glamorous as it seems to be. But often we find people, they because they're so enamored with material existence and so become so attached as a result of that, people become blinded. I say very often in class how people are attached to their body, their possession, bank balance, their new car, their house, their wife, their children, and blah, extension of all that. They become so attached to this thing, they become like tunnel vision, become blinded, absorbed in just this existence, and they're not able to see beyond that. And I remember in my very early days as a devotee, when I came across this verse here, Deyapatya Kalatra Dish Atmas Yesu Sainspi Desam Pramata Nidanam Pashana Pina Pasyati. When I came across this word, it struck me like a thunder, like a lightning bolt, bam! Because right from the first day, I went to the temple and met the devotees. I remember coming back home and I was having dinner with a friend and I was preaching to him. I was repeating some of the things I heard in the class. And I was repeating. And I was very frustrated because he was asking me a question, I couldn't answer it. I said, I got to go read more, I got to find out more, so I can answer these questions. And that set me on the path. So, but later on when I came across this verse, and it really struck me, I said, very often we speak to people, and especially in the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, we're very excited. It's like a mind opener. Our eyes just open up and so, wow, you know. It's right in front of me. And I'm all my life, I didn't see it, but now suddenly it just so clear. Everything is so clear. And we're all excited, we're enthusiastic, and we're going to speak to our friends, our best friend, want to share this valuable gem with our friend. And our friend just, what are you talking about? You've been brainwashed? Where have you been going? You've been going to the Harish? Be careful. You get brainwashed now. And you know, you hear all kinds of things, negative things from a friend. And you start thinking, why is it that he don't see it? I see it so clearly. Why is it they don't see? These words exactly explain that. Blinded. People become blinded by all this material attachment that is right in front of them, but they don't see. Even the very intelligent people, they don't see it. You can try to explain as much as you want. You can try to be as logical as you want. And it came to a point when they use up all the argument, they say, anyway, I'm not interested in this discussion. Let's do something else. And that's why I probably give an example. A sleeping person, you can wake up by sound. But someone who is pretending to sleep, you cannot wake him up. And anyone have kids going to school, you know that. Trying to wake up in the kid after school, they pretend not to sleep. Pretend they're sleeping, pretend they don't hear you. They hear you well, but they pretend. Because they don't want to wake up, it's very hard to wake them up. So you become blinded. And that's the reason why Sukadeva Goswami said, your question is very glorious. Because most people are not interested in such topics. They just want to be absorbed in their material existence. Going with the life, wake up in the morning, go to sleep, and they're dying each day. Every day just dying without any understanding of where they're ending up. With no goals. People plan their life. Especially if you're going on holiday. How many months before we start planning? Some people plan it to the details. If they're going on a long trip, then they plan in details how many days here, how many days there, where I'm going to stay, and what I'm going to do. They check out all the tourist sites online, what are the interesting places. It's all planned out. Our life, where we're going to end up, no plan. Leave it to chance. Roll up the dice. And that's a pitiful situation. And that's why for the Vaishnava, they're feeling pain. In the famous word by Prahlad Maharaj, Naiva Vijaya Paradurati Javaitaranya Twaya Naiva Vijaya Paradurati Javaitaranya Twaya. Anyone know that word? I forgot it. Now here. Wow, I just turned the patience right there. Naivat vijay paradurachya vaitaranyas tvaviya gayana mahamrita makna chitta sochetato vimukha chitta sa indiyata maya sukaya bhavan utpahato visuddha. Vimutha. He said, I do not feel any pain. I'm okay. Although Prahlad Maharaj, if anyone has any reason to complain about their life, and about all these obstacles and that they face, Prahlad Maharaj is first in line. By his own father trying to kill him in so many different ways. So it's quite amazing for him to say, I'm okay. I don't feel any inconveniences. Isn't it something amazing and something we want to learn from Prahlad Maharaj? Because when we get a bit, anything just go out of sync in our life, sometimes we get disturbed. Prashanam is not served in the right way. Then according to our taste, we get upset. My day is ruined. I didn't get good prashanam today. Right? And so on and so forth. There's so many things that we get disturbed about. So, but how? What is Prahlad Maharaj's secret? that in spite of all these things happening in so-called calamity, I mean, for majority of people, these are considered calamities. What happened to him? But he said, I'm not disturbed. I'm okay. And his secret, he said, Mahamrita, Gayana Mahamrita Magna Chitta. Chitta, my consciousness, because my consciousness is always absorbed in hearing and chanting about you. And by that, I'm remembering you. So my remembering you, although all these things are happening to me, I'm not disturbed. I probably give the example like devotee, like the lotus leaf. Water is on the lotus, but it's not attached to it. It doesn't affect it. It doesn't really get wet. So for the devotee, he's gliding through this material world above the most of material nature, because his consciousness is in transcendence. And his consciousness is absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. That he's not affected by what is all this, the material world, the three most of material nature may be raging around him, but he's just oblivion to it. He's not affected by it. He's like an observer, observing what is happening. And that's Prahlad Maharaj's secret. It's an open secret. And it's the same thing Shukadeva Goswami said. After praising Maharaj Parikshit for his good question, what was his answer to his question? Remember, Maharaj Parikshit asked his question, what should one hear, chant, remember? And he said, Tasmat Bharata Savatma Bhagavan Ishwaro Hari Shrotavya Kittitavyacha Smatavya Chittitabhayam. He said, Therefore, Bharata, O son of Bharat, again the language, son of Bharat, one should always remember, I always hear, chant, and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who removed all inauspiciousness, by which one can become free from all fear. Chitato Bhayam, free from all fear. And that practically sum up the Krishna conscious philosophy. In a nutshell, you want to say, put it that way. And of course, then he went on to explain and expand on it. Because Maharaj Parikshit was very curious. He wanted to know how, what to do, and so on. And that's also the similar answer, a question that Mother Devotee is asking. Let me hear more and more about the real fact of life. What is this birth and death? Is it as glamorous as it seems to be? Or it's not? So once we hear that the pain of birth and death, hunger and thirst, heat and cold, gradually one, the more we hear about it, then gradually one becomes detached. Now once you know what it is, if you know that certain activities really cause you pain, it's not going to take very long time before you start to detach yourself from those activities. Sometimes we are, but the problem is, a lot of people are feeling pain and not understanding and not knowing what's the reason for those pain. They don't know the real reason for those pains. They just look at the external circumstances and start blaming people. You are the cause of my pain. You are the cause of my pain. I'm feeling pain. I'm feeling frustrated because my sense gratification has not been satisfied. My desire has not been satisfied. That's why I'm frustrated. They're always blaming, but not blaming themselves. That they are the cause of all this problem. They are, by their previous activities, they are bringing upon themselves the present karma. They're just basically just going through their karma of good and bad, happiness and distress. People don't take responsibility. It's easier to blame others. Because if we take responsibility, what does that mean? It means I have to do something about it. It's on my shoulder. But when I pass it on to someone else has to carry the load, not me. I'm fine. And I'm feeling not fine because of you, so you better change. You better deal with me properly. Right? Responsibility. So we have to carry our own responsibility in spiritual life. We have to be responsible for our own spiritual life. And then accept our own, or shall we say, whatever happened to us, is we are the cause. In one sense, we are the cause of it. We bring it upon ourselves. So by acknowledging that, it also means I'm also in the position to undo it. If I'm the cause of this situation, I can also be the cause to get out of that situation. By putting the blame on others, we are actually disempowering ourselves. That is not within my control to do anything. But when we accept responsibility for our own life, we are actually empowering ourselves. That, okay, if by my foolishness I got myself in this material world, I've been engaging in simple activities and materialist activities, and now I've got myself entangled in the most of material nature, how can I get myself unentangled? How can I get myself out of it? So it's so important we take responsibility, because by taking responsibility we empower ourselves, not disempower. So unfortunately, majority of people unknowingly, that this is, and in all of their action, in all of the way of thinking, they every day they're just disempowering themselves from doing something to improve their life in the real sense. Because they don't want to own it. And they let other people, circumstances, control them. So by hearing all this, we empower ourselves with knowledge. That's another thing. It's so important. We have the instrument to empower ourselves. We have the tools to cut through the labyrinth of material existence. We have the tool to cut the knots of attachment and material existence. But we have to empower us. We have to empower ourselves to do it, equip ourselves. And why do you think Prabhupada wake up in the middle of the night every day just to give us the Srimad Bhagavatam, to give us Chaitanya Charitamrita, to empower us so that we can break free from the entangled material existence and progress in spiritual life? The more we empower ourselves with knowledge and action, when you talk about knowledge, knowledge is always followed by action. Otherwise, it's not knowledge. We don't know until we act. We haven't heard until we act upon what we hear. Can I close the door? Please. She heard. Because she's taking action. Right? So she heard what I say and she took action. That's hearing. It's not someone who said, "I hear you." Then do. If you hear, you do it. If you're not doing it, that means you haven't heard. So similarly with hearing, like classes, we're reading, it's also hearing, because Prabhupada is dictating. And we have to follow by action. That's real hearing. And by hearing, we empower ourselves more and more to deal with the onslaught of Kali, how to maneuver ourselves around all those traps, not falling into those traps, and steady progress. The more we know, the more we empower ourselves with knowledge, and more we apply it, the smoother our journey is. Sometimes we ask ourselves, why is it so difficult? Why Krishna consciousness is so difficult? Because we make it complicated. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is very simple for the simple-minded and very complicated for the complicated-minded. It's very simple. The process of Krishna consciousness, nothing complicated about it. It's very simple. What is more simpler than just hear and chant, remember Krishna, like Pradyumna Prabhu always say. Prabhupada always said, "What's the difficulty? What's the difficulty? Right? What's so difficult? Hear and chant, but we make it complicated." No, Prabhu, it's not so simple like that. You don't scratch your nose this way. You have to do it this way. You have to do some yoga asana, you know, scratch your nose and twist it this way, that way. He said, we complicate things. Otherwise, it's a very simple process. Even all this Sankhya, if sometimes the Mataji or even Prabhu, even myself, right? I consider sometimes myself like on a less intelligent class. Because when you start reading all this Sankhya philosophy, breakdown of the material energy, this 24 elements and the 5 senses and the 10 senses and all this, I just like, my mind just go flip flop. So I just concentrate. Oh, here it says, hear and chant. I hear and chant. Remember, I remember. And you do like this, and I do like this. So I make myself, my own Krishna very simple. No complication, not on this like analytical study, this and that, all the scientific jargon and so on. I can't handle it. It's just beyond me. And I don't even bother, I don't even try. So as soon as someone starts talking all this philosophical stuff, my mind just goes, ooh, Haribo, see you later. Ooh, it's too elevated for me. So we have to find our own niche. What is it that inspires me? Now what inspires me in my own Krishna consciousness? Follow that path. There are 9 processes of devotional service. And we hear about how each devotee become perfect. Right? Maharaj Parikshit became perfect by just hearing. Sukadev Goswami perfect by chanting. Prahlad Maharaj became perfect by remembering and so on. If we just even only just perfect one of the process, if you like to hear, just hear. You like to read, just read. And you want to chant, just chant. And serve, just serve. Serve all day. So while you're serving, chant. Simple. What's so complicated? What's the difficulty? And in this way, our progress can be. We can put all kinds of complication on our journey back to Godhead, or we can make it as simple as possible. Simple does not mean stupid. In fact, was it Rupa Goswami? Oh, can't remember, someone said it is an intelligent person who can explain a complicated topic in the most simple terms. You don't have to explain it in very, very complicated terms. Just take the essence of it, understand it, digest it, and then explain it in the simplest term. You don't have to try to impress people and using all these jargons and high-sounding languages. Not necessary. What's the use of using all this high jargon when people don't understand you? Imagine someone in the class and starts using all this, and half the class are falling asleep. And the other half is can't wait for the class to finish and have prasadam. Maybe one or two or three may say, oh, far out. You know, talking about the third eye that blinks but don't see. So it's intelligent to understand a complex, and that's what Prabhupada did actually. He can take the most sophisticated philosophy. I mean, Krishna conscious philosophy is sophisticated. Sometimes people may claim that Prabhupada didn't give everything. Didn't give the highest philosophy. Now, if we actually study our Prabhupada's books, what philosophy can be more elevated and more advanced than the discussion between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy? Highly advanced. Those discussions were from the lowest point all the way to the highest. Just from lowest to highest. Talk about Vanashram, beginning with Vanashram, and what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected, all the way up to the highest point of the love of the gopis. All in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But because Prabhupada presented it in very understandable language, some of people think, oh, it's not very advanced. It's not true. But because Prabhupada has such deep insight of the Krishna consciousness, he's able to present it that way. It's the same. If you go traveling, you ask someone, for example, you ask someone, anyone here, and describe to you how to get to Mayapur. Someone who has just read it from a map will describe one way, and you may not even understand what he's talking about. But someone who has been to Mayapur at least many times, he can describe to you in detail and then in a very easy to understand way how to get to Mahapur. And then he can describe to you where the bus or where the taxi is going to stop, where's the parking spot, and where you need to go. And you go here, you turn left, and you walk how many meters, and then you turn right, and then you come to this, and there's this Govinda restaurant, and then there's a building, and there's a temple, and the bar, and all the different things. Because as he's describing it, he's seeing it in his mind's eye. Because he's been there. And that's the difference between when you hear from someone who's speaking who has realization, or we just babbling out from memory, or just from book knowledge. Then that's the difference. And you can feel it. So that's why when Prabhupada speaks, you really get to see the picture, you know. And I was just reading yesterday, one of my very, very good friends, he was writing, because he just heard about one Vaishnava pass away last November. And he was describing how he had a great fortune to meet him once. He was invited by Indradumna Maharaj. That Vaishnava is a older Vaishnava, a friend of Indradumna Maharaj, and they waited for lunch. So he came there, son was serving, and he and his wife came there, and this Vaishnava and Indradumna Maharaj asked him to say something. So he chanted some beautiful sloka describing the pastime of Krishna. And my friend was saying, he said, it was, and the son also replied to him, he said, that incident is etched in my mind. I can never forget that. Because when he was just chanting those sloka and reciting the pastime of Krishna, you feel the presence. You feel like you're there. You feel like you're participating in the pastime. And that's the power of hearing from a self-realized soul. No, because when they're describing something, they're actually experiencing it. When the Goswamis are writing about the leelas of Krishna's leela, they're actually experiencing it and describing it in detail as they are seeing it. is not just some theoretical study or philosophical study. No, it's all self-realization. And that's a power. I want to end this class and share something with you. If you don't mind. I have to use technology. I was going to write it down. I said, why do I need to write it down? I'm living in this technological age. So I'm still trying to get used to it. This is a letter written by Satchinanda Swami to a disciple. And it's so appropriate. Very instructive. So one word of encouragement. See, I don't know of any better sadhana than to act knowing that Krishna is right by our side, watching and blessing us mercifully. Please apply this. Wherever you are, and whatever the situation may be, see the Lord right by your side, and you will experience a different perception. You start to see things differently. B, different developments of the situation. Just because now the situation is a plus Krishna situation. Powerful. So, most powerful sadhana that we can apply in our life. That we are not alone. Krishna is by our side. Now, when you're faced with any situation thinking I'm alone, your perception of the situation is very different than when you feel Krishna is by my side. Very different perspective. And the development of the situation, the outcome of it will also be very different. Now, that's another very empowering thought and habit to develop. Very empowering. So are there any questions or comments? Now nobody dare to ask questions because they start thinking, is it beneficial for myself? Beneficial for everyone? Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, thank you for the very
enlightening. Let's be louder, please.
My question is, as you mentioned, that it's very hard to wake up a person who's pretending to sleep. So if you come across that person, then quite often,
okay, like a friend or not waking up a child, right? Okay. You say it's very difficult to wake up a person pretending to sleep. So what shall we do? You meet the person repeatedly. What do you do? Prasadam. They don't want to hear, but they will not say no to eat. So that's the thing, we have a lot of weapons to use. We have the holy name, we have philosophy, and we have a secret weapon, prasada. Who will say no to that? And we don't have to put in the face, eat this prasadam from Krishna, you get purified. No, just give them prasadam, something tastes good. Let them eat, and they get purified. So maybe take a little longer process if they don't willingly do it. So they'll get purified and then one day they'll become. And make friends. My approach from my negative experiences in preaching from my early days is I don't preach. I make friends. I make friends with people. And when the opportunity arises and when they ask, then I preach, then I describe. Like yes, last night, I went to sit down with Sham's neighbor, someone I met before, and I forgot that they were actually Buddhist, because Sri Lanka. And we started talking, and he asked me a question, and I started talking about different Hinduism, what is Hinduism, and the broad spectrum of Hinduism, and blah, 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 and the worship of different devas. Then I realized actually he's Buddhist. but he and his wife was interested in asking a lot of things. Then I gave a whole historical perspective that at one point we were talking in our own table. Historical perspective of the time when Lord Buddha appeared, why he did what he did, and then Shankaracharya, and then Ramanujacharya and other acharya from Sampradaya leading up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achincha Veda Veda Tattva. And it was such an eye-opener for him. He said, "Whoa, yeah, actually I need to come over, Shama, I need to talk more about these things. I didn't realize that you guys have so much knowledge and know so much." And, you know. So he's just going slowly, and then when you see they are interested in here, then open up more. Attract. Learn the art of attracting people. Not pounding down on them, but attracting them. That's what Prabhupada, attract people to Krishna consciousness. So, if they don't want to hear, that's fine. Give them prasadam. Give them your association. By your association, they'll become purified. You don't. When we're younger, we try to force it on people, but that's not the way to do it. People will just reject. Be a gentleman. Even if they just respect you, they say, "Yeah, it's not for me, but yeah, he's a devotee, and I can see the good quality in him." They appreciate it. They respect you. They're making advancement. They're appreciating a devotee. So, more subtle approach. Yes, Prabhu.
When you were talking about inside Prabhupada lecture, I was remembering one lecture he gave in London, 21st August 1973, next day to Janmashtami.
Yeah.
And wonderful lecture, and he was saying in verse 1, second chapter, 14 verse. And he was telling that you can be immortal, by Krishna Prabhupada, you can be immortal.
Immortal.
Scientists are trying to make you live longer, but here we can give you a way. You can become mortal. You don't have to die.
Yes.
No
word,
no.
Yeah. So Mahatma Prabhu was saying that there was a lecture from Prabhupada day before Gopinam. He said people want to become immortal, that are trying to prolong their life. But why prolong your life? You can be immortal by being Krishna conscious. Why just prolong life?
Deep inside.
Even when you prolong your life, you still have to die. No, why not once and for all? Immortal. Any other question? You have a question?
Just
comment.
Material nature, like we see the birth and death is very painful, as you said in the lecture. When we try to preach to people, you know, we start with the bad things that we are facing in the material world, like birth, death, and everything. Some people get scared, as a, you know, like we are trying to scare them off.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also start thinking that there is too much negative, you know, it's not giving them some positive things,
mm-hmm.
and then they run away from us.
Like me, in the beginning.
Like when we say we are temporary, we want to die, people get scared.
Well, okay, Yatra Prabhu is asking that when you talk about all this negative, birth, death, suffering material, when people think it's too negative and they're just scared and they don't want to hear more. Well, it's again the words from Deha Patya Kalapriti. People are blinded. They're not seeing. They don't want to see. So instead of just going negative, we are not like some tradition, just pounding on people, you don't accept, you don't believe, you go to hell. You know? And we're not. I mean, there's so much positive things and beautiful things about Krishna consciousness. Why do we have to pound people with negative? This is not what they want to hear. So give them something attractive. Attract first. And then, what's the Rupa Goswami? Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna nivesaya. Somehow or other attracts them to Krishna consciousness. Rules and regulations can come afterwards. And Prabhupada applied that in the early days. Didn't tell the devotees about four regulative principles and all that, and until they were sitting by the yagya, the first initiation. By the way, the four regulative principles. And the day before, he has to negotiate how many rounds. Right? So, yeah, people get scared away, right? And that's what I did, you know, I start preaching to this young couple of a four regular prima, and then they just can't wait to go to the bus and leave. So we attract them, how wonderful Krishna consciousness. Get them a taste. Param jiswa nivatate. Give them, it's a child, I mean you're a father. Can you just take something off from your child? No. You say, yeah, I give you this, give me that. Like this? Like this? Right. Not like a bigger toy for a small toy, but you know. His daughter has a Mercedes. So, attract. Give them a higher taste. When they taste a higher taste, then they want to give up the lower taste. Because they will come to a point where they have to come to a crossroad. And it just become inconceivable. They cannot reconcile the two things. It's either this or that. And that's what happened. I was rejecting Krishna consciousness when I first came. But the taste was getting stronger and stronger. And the mistake I made was I was reading Krishna book. I was reading Krishna book a lot because I was doing a lot of traveling on the train. So I had a lot of time on the train I was reading. And he come to a point and say, I didn't want to take up Krishna consciousness. But I said, this is the right thing to do. I was attached to my party ways and all that. I was even telling myself, I said, why do I have to meet the Hare Krishna now when I'm in the prime of my life? I was 22 years old, prime, you know, ready to conquer the world. And so many things. And why not until retirement age then I can meet? But in the end I said, it's what he says is right. He answered all the questions I had as a child. So from the time I met the devotees, like 2 months later or something, I joined the temple. I was traveling in Europe. So attraction. The power of attraction. Positive. Use positive approach. And the other thing is that anyone in sales here? Mistake. Everyone is a salesman. Doesn't matter what you do. You have to sell what you're doing. When you're a preacher, you're selling Krishna consciousness. So anyone that says this, man? Better. Yeah. So, we learn there's a principle called NLP. Anyone has heard of NLP? Neuro-Linguistic Program. Right? It's something coming from study of psychology. So basically, there are quite a few things, but one of the things is that when you talk to people, like when you try to present something to the person, you want to bring them to your, you know, side. You don't go against what they're thinking. Because as soon as people get challenged, they'll hunker down. Then they get ready for a fight. Because what you're doing, you're undermining their position. And then all the false ego comes into play.
False ego?
Yeah, the false ego comes into play. So you have, that means when we're talking to someone or preaching to someone, it doesn't matter. You have to have a presence of mind. And that's again our sadhana is so important. To bring the mind to control the focus from our chanting. And when we talk, you're so focused, you're so present at the moment, and you're so present with that person, you can pick up the reaction of the person. And you can, within a very short time, you get a feel of that person, where he's at. And within the first minute or two, you're prodding, and you know where to go. Not in a confrontation way, but go around it. Find something in common. Find something in common, and then immediately they think, he's my friend. We speak the same language. We have the same interests. And immediately the rapport is established. That's why, I mean, I'm pretty good in sales, what I'm doing. Because I learned this as a devotee. You learn it from preaching, right? From Sankirtan, from book distribution. You learn all these things. And you just have to apply it in our work. That's all. Same principle. So in our preaching, we develop rapport with the person. Find some commonality. And when that person feels very comfortable with you, what happened? His guard is down. I mean, like your friend. If he knows you're going to preach to him, immediately his Star Wars defense system is all there. 1 layer, 2 layers, 3 layers, 4 layers. You know? And all the missiles pointing out. Don't come close. And there's no way you can approach. But you come in. Shalom, and then slowly, little. Oh, no danger there. Remove one layer. Right, yeah. Remove. And they feel so comfortable with you. They're just so relaxed. And then when you say something, they just absorb everything you say. Psychology.
When you're talking about Prasha, Prabhupada, when you went to Russia,
what?
Prabhupada?
Yeah.
When you went to Russia.
Russia.
Russia, then Prabhupada was telling you, get some people to preach.
Yeah.
Such perfect
just grab anyone. They're going to grab one. From one, it became thousands. Tens of thousands. Does that answer the question?
Perfect.
Yeah. You have to use our intelligence to approach. And last time I said, talk about going in like a needle. And come out like a plow. Don't go in like a plow and come out like a needle. Right? Relationship, it's all about relationship. And everyone is looking, like Josh Harrison said, all we need is love. And there's a famous saying in sales, it's not how much you know, it's how much you care. And you go and speak to a person, and like you, when you do a presentation to some company for your consulting work, whatever, it's not also so much how you know, but how much you care about the person, about the company that you're going to contribute to the company, you can bring to the company to improve their bottom line. That's what's going to attract them. So it's when you talk to a person, how much you care? Is this person just trying to pound some philosophy into me? Or does he actually care? Because if you care, you also be hearing very carefully what that person is saying, what his concerns are. And if we care and ask the right question, they will tell you everything how to sell to them. They will tell you, they will reveal all the soft spots, all the hot buttons to push. So that's why again, you have to have a presence of mind. To pick up all this, what this person is saying, why is he objecting? Why is he so against Krishna consciousness? Or why is he so against spiritual principle? Why is he against this and that? So many things. What is it that makes this person tick? So when you pick up this thing, then you know what part of the, how to present your Krishna, the Krishna consciousness in a way that appeals to them, that attracts to them, that attracts them. It's not like, you know, you heard the saying, different stroke for different folks. Heard it? That's a management principle. Different stroke for different folk. You don't manage everyone same. In fact, you don't manage people. You manage things. People cannot be managed. That's a mistake managers make. They try to manage people. You manage things, but you motivate people to do things.
Actually, for myself, when I became a devotee, Prabhupada writing this birth, death, origin, essence, just in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, was very, you know, heavy. But it had a big impact to take us to church.
The strong words from Prabhupada, you mean?
Sorry?
From what do you say? From Prabhupada introduction?
In the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, when I read the first time Bhagavad Gita, that statement of birth, death, old age, and disease,
impact.
That really impacted me, and that I just took up Krishna consciousness very seriously. Mm. But for others, I mean, it is too heavy.
It's different.
Yeah.
So, your brother was saying that when he first take up Krishna consciousness, because he read from the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, birth, death, old age, and disease, and that's a big impact. Yes. And that's why we stress the importance of distributing Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada in his book, he can be quoting from 7th canto of Prahlad Maharaj. Fools, rascals. He can say that. And people will read it. Fools, rascals, fools. Hey, wait a minute. You're talking about me. But you're going to preach to someone, fools, rascals. They say, you're so arrogant. Right? We are not Prabhupada. And the mistake sometimes after Prabhupada left, some devotee was trying to act like Prabhupada then. But we are not Prabhupada. Prabhupada, first of all, is an elderly gentleman. Very aristocratic. Not very cultured. He's already command a certain respect. Right? From people. And then on top of that, all this knowledge, this realization, he's the founder of Chaya. Straight away, is like that. There's this aura around him, and then he is a young guy. Just so, what do you know? And then kind of trying to talk down to me. Who do you think you are, calling me fools and rascals? But Prahlad Maharaj, 5 years old, he can say that, fools and rascals. His father didn't accept that either. His father didn't appreciate it. So, yes, in Prabhupada, Prabhupada is very frank, very direct. But he is in that position, he can do that. Right? And people take it differently than us telling them. So when you distribute Prabhupada's book, it has a lot of power, more powerful effect when people read them. Because when they're reading at home, they don't feel like their ego is being challenged in front of a person. So they're at home, they're just to themselves. And they have time to contemplate. Yeah, actually, what they say is true, you know. Right? So distribute Prabhupada's books. Distribute more books. Everyone should make a commitment to distribute some books every week or every month. Even if it's one book a month. I mean, in a congregation of a few hundred, that's a few thousand books a year. Alright. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.